A new study by the National Academy of Sciences suggests that the U.S. can't take its current technological superiority for granted. By 2050, the U.S. will account for only 18% of global R&D spending. The U.S. share has already fallen to less than a third of what the world collectively spends. Dr. Arden Bement is co-chair of the research project. It concluded that DOD needs to do a better job of monitoring the technological developments of other nations and, wherever possible, collaborating with those nations. He spoke with Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
Technology development is accelerating around the world very rapidly. Many countries that want to build their economies and also their science and technology workforce are investing in new universities and also investing more in federally funded research. As a result, the fraction of the world research and development that is provided by the U.S. will be decreasing over the next decade. By 2050, it's expected to be much less than a third. Everyone is globalizing at the present time. Industry started globalizing about three or four decades ago. Universities now are globalizing and have been over the past decade. And now federal agencies are beginning to see that their missions require also globalizing. And this clarion call has been given more than once in studies over the past 5 or 10 years. But there was seemed to be a need for a further study to determine what mechanisms are currently in place within the Department of Defense to not only track these new technologies, but to acquire them and put them to use for national security.
One sort of simplistic way of looking at this issue might be that during the Cold War, technology development, in military terms anyway, was basically us and then the Soviet Union, which in some ways probably made the problem easier to think about. When we talk about needing to know what's going on in a world of much more globalized R&D, are we mostly talking about what other nation states are doing right now, or is it more what's happening in the commercial space among, say, transnational corporations, or some mix of both?
Well, when you look at the communities of interest for science and engineering within the Department of Defense, they've identified 17 areas of interest. Some of these are specific to defense applications like countering improvised explosive devices, countering weapons of mass destruction, developing weapons technologies, and so forth. These clearly have to be driven by the Department of Defense as high priority areas of attention. On the other hand, there are other areas that are fairly general, like biomedical applications, space applications, advanced electronics, energy and power technologies that are being driven by the private sector for the most part. And in this case, there's plenty of room for leveraging by the Department of Defense because all enterprises that are engaged in these types of technologies, we call it the Holy Trinity, nanotechnology, biotechnology, and information technology, are spread around the world. And there's already a very strong collaboration with U.S. universities and also through industry partnerships that the Department of Defense could leverage with. And in this sense, conserve scarce resources.
And so, yeah, I guess another thing that's different about this period that we're in now is that getting access to innovations, some of them anyway, that are happening outside our borders doesn't necessarily involve a bunch of cloak and dagger businesses necessarily. In many cases, it's probably just a matter of buying or leasing those things in a completely above board way and then using them for our own purposes, provided we know they exist. I think that's one of the points you're making.
Well, our focus was pretty much on basic research, which we would call 6-1 in the Defense Department, 6-1 and 6-2. These areas of research are fairly general and have not yet reached a specific application. So they're upstream from the market and upstream from weapons developments. But on the other hand, what's happening is that the time necessary to take a new concept to application or take a new idea to the marketplace is getting shorter all the time. This has been the case over the last 20 years. It will continue to shrink more rapidly in the next two or three decades. So in many cases, if you're not engaged with leading researchers around the world, you could get blindsided very, very quickly and get behind the power curve. And that's why we, and here I'm talking about the committee, we're particularly concerned. And I think this is generally the concern of past department studies and other activities by the Defense Science Board to call this to leadership attention. This was the primary objective of our study, is to look at this quite carefully, look at it systematically, look at it from different angles, and also compare best practices among the various military departments.
That's a perfect segue to talk a bit more about where we are now and where we need to go. I think you basically found that the military services do have some capacity to assess what's going on around the world as far as S&T,
yes,
and even to collaborate with other nations, I think. But if I'm reading you right, those programs we do have are not exactly coordinated with each other as well as they could be. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, this we did find. We examined practices in each of the services. They're all very much involved, and they all have different methodologies. But in some cases, there's not information sharing, and not sufficient information sharing, even though the communities of interest have been well defined. There's not sufficient leveraging, and in many cases, the mechanisms that do exist are not systematically assessed and evaluated for their impact. In some cases, there's a lot of talent in overseas offices that are doing their best to identify where there may be opportunities, but they lack the resources to carry out the engagement, both the outreach going to the overseas offices and the backreach coming back to headquarters. Is not as well coordinated as it could be. In some respects, there's not even the degree of coordination among the various services, even though their offices are co-located, and even though in some cases they're tracking the same areas of technology. So what this means is that the enterprise is still under-optimized and under-leveraged, and there are opportunities for not only greater effectiveness, but also for, again, conserving scarce resources. And this is especially the case if one looks ahead to likely budget outcomes for defense over the next 5 to 10 years.
You mentioned a lack of resources in what the services do have overseas. My sense is that among the resources there are, this is one of the areas in which most of the resources and the political heft, frankly, are dispersed throughout the military services. And yeah, while they are technically subordinate to OSD, in the real world, it's almost impossible for the Secretary of Defense to herd these cats in a coordinated fashion. I mean, am I being too cynical? Are there realistic ways for the DoD research and engineering outfit to get the military services all pointed to one heading?
Well, I think one important aspect of the study calls for a more systematic evaluation of how the resources are being used. In some cases, there may be cutbacks in travel and attendance at conferences, and we know that that's impeding career development of the science and technology workforce within the department. That could be a waste, or it could be looked upon as a waste. The other factor that we learned in talking with some of the experts in the overseas offices, there's a general opinion among them that serving overseas is not necessarily looked at career enhancing. Mm. In other words, it's almost looked upon as a terminal activity. And that's unfortunate because looking at it from the standpoint of the private sector and the kind of outreach that they do, they require a certain amount of overseas engagement for executive training and for moving into executive positions. And our sense is that the Department of Defense should do the same. They should look upon these assignments as being critical for leadership development.
My understanding is this report was requested jointly by all three of the military departments. As you went through all of the various meetings that you had amongst the board members and the interviews you had with the services, is it your sense that the three military departments want to coordinate their efforts, basically have an intention to go in the directions that the report recommends?
I think all of them are leading out, and they're trying to improve their current methodologies, but also to try and reduce some of the barriers. Some of the barriers are not just financial. Some of them have to do with the ability to communicate and the ability to exchange information over the internet. But what they wanted primarily was an expert outside opinion and review, including top leaders from the private sector, from top industry, and also from academia, because all these sectors are doing the same thing. They're all using the same methodologies. Some of these are human-directed through science collaboration. Some of it is using advanced information technology tools. And so there is a lot of experience that can be exchanged, and this study was a step in that direction.